You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, the 17th of January, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. As always, if you like this show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and leave the show a good review in iTunes. It is Thursday, which means we'll go to the mailbag. These are questions sent to us from the comment section of GangreneNation.com. Next, our first question. John, I could be wrong, but I have a feeling that for a variety of reasons, the Jets will hold on to Leonard Williams. With that in mind, how do you see the influence of Greg Williams on this year's draft? Will the Jets still primarily go for an edge rusher or an interior defensive lineman? I think I'm with you. I think... My guess is that Leonard Williams is going to stay with the Jets. I think if we're talking defense, the change to Greg Williams, I'm not sure how much it impacts the team's draft strategy, because I think the team needs help at the premium defensive positions, and those are edge rusher and corner, especially edge rusher, because I mean, this team has not had a consistent pass rusher off the edge since the days of John Abraham. And I think one of the reasons, I don't think you can put it all on this, I think one of the reasons Williams has kind of underachieved on the stat sheet is just there are not many pass rushing threats on this defense. He's been seeing double teams a lot, so maybe if you get some more talent up front with him, especially off the edge, he'll see more favorable one-on-one matchups. I think that if all things are equal, the Jets should focus on offense this year, just because I think they have to build a better offensive infrastructure around Sam Darnold. I think the offense they were putting around Darnold last year in terms of talent was just not good enough. So I think that has to be the priority. I think if you're going defense, it's one of the premium positions. I think those are the spots that are in the big most need. I actually think that they're not in terrible shape at some of the other spots on defense. I think maybe there's not as much talent as there should be, considering the resources they've invested, but I think the other spots on defense actually are not terrible. I think you can work with a lot of the other guys the Jets have on this team on defense. They have to get edge rushers and corners, though, and especially edge rushers. I think, to me, edge rushers is the top priority. I'm not even sure I would go corner, you know, early in the draft, because I think edge rusher is a bigger priority. An edge rusher really changes everything on the defense, so I think that would be my focus. And I think that's true no matter who's running the scheme. I think edge rusher is a priority, and for most defenses, corner is also going to be a priority. Those are the two positions I think the Jets are in most need of. Our next question: should we trade the number 3 pick in the 2019 draft for the Seahawks uniform designer? I mean, I don't want anything that resembles that Seahawks uniform. I don't know what I want in the Jets uniform, but I do not want these new uniforms. I'm telling you, they all look terrible. I don't want anything resembling what the Seahawks have, so I hope the new uniforms don't look like that. Next question. How can Gaze keep the wheels from falling off if he brings in big-ticket players and they decide their opinion on how the team should win is more important than his? Is this a disciplined unit like the Pats, where the players can be benched or traded when they conflict with the head coach? Is it necessarily a different beast from this organization and thus beyond the Jets' grasp? Well, yeah, I think that it's very different than the New England situation. I think there are three things that make it different from the New England situation. Number one is, in New England, you have Bill Belichick, who has 5 Super Bowl rings, and there's just a certain amount of credibility that comes with that. You know, a guy is not going to mess around with Belichick. Belichick's you can be a stern taskmaster, but you have to get players to buy in. You have to get players to respect you. I think respect is the most important thing from a head coach. You have to get buy-in from the players. You know, Belichick is a pretty stern guy. He's a pretty imposing figure. So was Parcells. So was Vince Lombardi. You know, there are lots of great coaches who have been kind of disciplinarian, so to speak. But their players respect them, and they buy in. And, you know, you don't necessarily need to be a disciplinarian to get players' respect. Tony Dungy was a really nice guy, you know, very affable guy. And his players respected him. So I think it's about respect. And I think Belichick has respect because of his track record. So I think it's a different animal when you're talking about somebody like an Adam Gase. You know, you can be a disciplinarian, but will guys tune you out if you don't have the wins to back it up? I think there's something, and that's one of the reasons, one of the things that makes me uneasy about Adam Gase is just the guy he reminds me of a lot is Mangini. And, you know, Adam Gase is a really smart guy when it comes to football. I don't think anybody would question Adam Gase's knowledge of X's and O's, just like I think Mangini is a smart guy when it comes to football. But when it comes to relating to people, getting the buy-in, that's where Mangini fell short. I think that's maybe where Adam Gase fell short in Miami. It's not just enough to be, you know, a disciplinarian. If the guys, you know, if you, guys will tune you out, guys will, you know, guys will stop buying into your program, and that creates a problem if you're too heavy-handed and you don't have the credibility, the track record to back it up. So I think that's number one. I think it's number one is that Gase doesn't have the reputation of a Belichick to make this situation similar to New England. Number two is, this is actually something I just thought of. It's very timely because I'm reading a book about the Golden State Warriors, the team that's become the dominant team in the NBA basketball. The Patriots are kind of a destination where people want to be there. That, you know, and the I came across this in this book I'm reading about the Warriors. One of the seminal moments in their process of building to a championship organization came when they were courting a free agent named Andre Iguodala, who ended up signing with them, ended up being a really important player for that franchise. And they went into the meeting with Iguodala with this big presentation about they're trying to sell the they were trying to sell themselves. And they get there, and Iguodala is pretty much selling himself. He's saying, "This is what I'll bring to your team." And they realize that that franchise, which had been not so great in the past, which had really struggled to attract premium talent, they'd become a destination. People wanted to play for them because they were viewed as a team on the rise. I don't think the Jets are there yet. I think the Jets are a team, you know, I'm not sure they're necessarily a team people want to go to at this point. The Jets may have to overpay to get people to go to them. They may have to convince people. They're not a destination. New England's a destination because you get the chance to play with Brady, you get the chance to play with Belichick, you get the chance to win. So guys are going to tend to be on better behavior in a scenario like that because they want to be there. They're a destination team. The Jets are not at this point because the Jets haven't won. And that's the reason Golden State really struggled to attract free agents before they became this quality organization because they weren't winning. Once they started winning, they became a place people wanted to go. And third, and this is actually really important, and I think it's something people miss sometimes, is yes, the Patriots take on guys who are risky. You know, they take on guys who are quote unquote character risks. They do take those guys in. They don't steer clear of those guys. But if you notice, for the most part, maybe there's an exception here or there, they don't invest a lot in these guys. They buy these guys when their stock is at their lowest. You know, you think about Josh Gordon. They gave up a pretty late round pick for him. We think about one of the success stories from over a decade ago, Randy Moss. Gave up a fourth round pick for him. Albert Haynesworth, one that was not a success story. They don't invest heavily in these guys, and that plays a role in everything because those guys know they can be cut in any minute because the Patriots have nothing invested in you. First of all, that should show you how low your stock is, the fact that you could be obtained so cheaply by the Patriots. But second of all, you mean nothing to them. If you don't act according to how they want you to act, you're gone. Because what have they lost? They've lost a late round pick. So that's not really much of a sacrifice to get rid of you. So that's one of the things that I think is a powerful motivating tool, is the fact the Patriots don't have big money invested in most of these guys. They have not traded premium picks for most of these guys. And even if they had, Belichick has the most job security in the NFL. So you're not going to outlast Belichick. You're not going to win a battle against Belichick. If it's you against Belichick, Belichick's going to win and you're gone. And that's something most coaches don't have. Most coaches don't have that job security where they feel like they can get rid of anybody and there will be no repercussions. So I think that those things play. I don't think the situation is similar. I think Gase is going to have to get a buy-in from guys. I just think the situations are very, I don't see the Jets being like the Patriots right now. Now, maybe one day they will be if they start winning more. But at this point, the Patriots have a much easier time with these guys because for a number of reasons. And, you know, one of the reasons is just they won't invest. They tend to not invest in guys. They tend to not invest big in guys who are viewed as risky. They're not going to be in on big contract guys who are risky. The risky guys they take, they eliminate the risk because they don't invest much in them. They have nothing, so they can cut those guys very easily. Our next question, if the Jets draft tackle Jonah Williams in the first round, what will they do with Kelvin Beachum? Do they cut him, keep him at left tackle, and move Williams to right tackle? Well, part of that is going to be determined by the moves they make in free agency and in the offseason. I'm guessing they probably would not cut Beachum. If all things are equal, I think what you may see is sometimes what teams will do is to ease a guy into the NFL, they'll play him at guard the first year or two, and then slide him where he doesn't have to protect the edge. It's, you know, a little easier. He doesn't have to go up against the elite edge rushers, and then slide him out to tackle in year two or so. But it depends on what happens. If the Jets invest heavily on the interior of their offensive line, it's possible Beachum goes. My hunch is that they'd keep him around for a year. And I think that they like Shell. And now we'll see what the new coaching staff has to say. But my hunch is that they'd keep Shell around at right tackle. So my guess, you know, if you're asking me right now what's going to happen, my guess would be that you'd see Williams start at maybe left guard. And then in a year or so, when Beachum's a free agent next year, I think. So then Williams may slide out to left tackle in a year if that's how they feel. That's where they feel he'll thrive. Next question, who would you sign to back up Sam Darnold? That is, you know, that's an interesting question. I had not thought about that until I read the question. So I did a little research and I went to SpotTrack and checked who the free agent quarterbacks are. And after checking who the free agent quarterbacks are, my answer might be I don't care, because there are not many good free agent quarterbacks available. I'll take it back. There are two guys who would interest me, but I don't think either of them is going to sign up for a backup job. One is Tyrod Taylor, and the other is Teddy Bridgewater, but I think both of them are at a point of their career where they're probably looking for, and they probably could get jobs as bridge quarterbacks, you know, a team that doesn't have an obvious solution, a quarterback that may be looking at drafting somebody. You may sign a Tyrod Taylor or a Teddy Bridgewater to kind of be the veteran guy, be the placeholder for a rookie you're going to draft. So, I mean, if either of them would be willing to come to the Jets and understand the role would be a backup to Sam Darnold, I mean, those are the two best guys, but I kind of doubt either of them is really going to be on the table. In fact, I think if Teddy Bridgewater was willing to be a backup to Sam Darnold, they may have signed him. They probably would have signed him for more than 1 year, and they probably would not have traded him. So I'm guessing he's off the table. But I mean, you look at this list. I'll read just the names on this list on SpotTrack who are going to be free agent quarterbacks. You have our buddy Josh McCown. You have Matt Schaub. You have our buddy Ryan Fitzpatrick. You have Matt Cassel. You have RG3, our buddy Geno Smith. Joe Webb, our buddy Mark Sanchez, our kind of buddy Josh Johnson, who had a brief stint with the Jets in preseason a few years ago. Adam Gase's buddy Brock Osweiler, Brandon Whedon, Sean Mannion, Tom Savage. I mean, they're just Kevin Hogan, Brett Hundley. I mean, there are not many attractive names on this list. So it almost doesn't matter. I got to be honest with you. I don't think bringing back McCown would be the worst thing in the world. Now, I would like to get him for less than $10 million. I'm hoping he'd take a discount. But, you know, he's a guy who will buy into his role. He's liked in the locker room. He has a good relationship with Darnold. I think his relationship with Darnold is probably overrated in terms of the actual impact. But I don't think it's negative to have him around the locker room, to have a guy who kind of showed Darnold, this is how you act like a pro on and off the field. This is how you study film, you know, things like that. He's kind of taken on a player coach type role. So I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world if they brought him back. And I know, look, he was not good when he was in the lineup this year, but I think a lot of that had to do with his surroundings. He's a guy who, if you put him in the right situation, could probably be functional. So I all things are equal, I guess I'd go with McCown just because he's the guy you know. So, and he's a guy, like I said, who's well-liked in the locker room. And you know he's not going to be a guy who's going to complain about being a backup, which I think is kind of important. Good relationship with Darnold. So I guess that's probably where I'm going. I mean, I don't really have a strong preference. I guess Brock Osweiler has the best grasp of the Gase offense right now. But, I mean, anybody really want Brock Osweiler? I don't think so. Next question, is there any reason to believe Gase may keep Jeremy Bates as offensive coordinator? Because on a funny side note, he's currently listed as the coordinator on the Jets website. No, I don't. There are no guarantees in life, but I would be shocked if Jeremy Bates sticks around. I mean, it's pretty clear that they were not happy with the job the coaching staff did with Sam Darnold. I mean, there are all kinds of stories about the problems that have come out. It was just a bad fit. The players don't want Bates back. Gase is a very hands-on guy with his offense. So I don't think there's any chance. They kept him. I don't even know why they kept, you know, they did not fire most of the coaching staff with Todd Bowles. And I guess in theory, you know, you keep him around in case the new guy wants to keep him around, but that was never going to happen in practice. I mean, so I don't really even understand why Bates wasn't officially fired, but he's going to be let out of his contract, I would presume. This is going to be the Gase offense. This is not going to be the Jeremy Bates offense. So I think that Jeremy Bates' tenure with the Jets is finished, and that's something I feel very confident about. Next question, who will be the defensive end in the 4-3 defense? I don't think the defensive end is, I don't think the edge guy is on the team right now, but I think that this whole idea of the Jets switching from 3-4 to 4-3 is kind of overstated, and we actually have a guest scheduled tomorrow who's going to talk a little bit about Greg Williams, who got a firsthand view of the Cleveland Browns this year under Williams. And, you know, I think, first of all, Williams is pretty adaptable, and second of all, I just think in today's NFL, there's not the difference, the dividing line between defensive styles is not 4-3, 3-4 anymore, because teams don't really play their base defense all that much anyway. And most defenses are multiple, so I think that this stuff is kind of overstated. I don't think the edge guy for this team is on the roster right now. At least I hope it's not, because I don't think they really have anybody. I don't care what defensive scheme you have. I don't think the Jets have a quality edge rusher right now, so I think that has to be the priority. So we'll see what happens. I mean, there are a couple of guys who may intrigue me a little bit in free agency. Most of the great guys don't make it to free agency, so I don't think there are going to be any top-notch guys. And one guy who does interest me a bit is Brandon Graham, who kind of signaled earlier in the week he's with the Eagles. I think he had the big strip sack on Brady last year in the Super Bowl, if memory serves. He's a guy I've always liked. He never quite got there as like a big-time sack artist, but he's usually in the upper echelon in terms of generating pressure, so I think he'd be a good... he's not a guy who I want to be my number one pass rusher, but I think he'd be a good signing for the Jets. He's a guy I would probably look to target in free agency. I'm sure there are some other guys I can come up with in the weeks and months ahead. But I think if the Jets' current edge rusher, whether it's 3-4, 4-3, 3-man line, 4-man line, whatever defense they're running, I think if the current edge rusher is already on the roster, you're not looking at a great year next year. I think the Jets, that's one of the top priority spots for the Jets that they need to upgrade. And our last question, should the Jets extend Leonard Williams now, and for how much? You know, I've gone back and forth on Williams. I was down on him this year because I did not think he had a great year, but I'm talking myself into him right now. It's just, there are a couple of things. First of all, we talked about this with Andrew yesterday, it's amazing how young, you forget how young he is because he's been in the league for 4 years already, but he's still young enough where there's upside there. There's potential for growth. At only 24 years old, he could still get better. Second of all, you know, we'll see what the coaching change does. I shy away from blaming everything on Todd Bowles. It seems like everybody blames everything on Todd Bowles when players underperform. And you know, you have to remember, Leonard Williams was a Pro Bowler in year two with Todd Bowles. So I don't know how legitimate that is, but I don't know. Maybe Greg Williams can do something to unlock him a little bit. And also, I mean, the Jets just don't have much young talent on this team with upside. So it's like, how do you trade away a guy who's young and good, who you know is a quality player at the very least? So I think I would. I was kind of up in the air on this till a few days ago, but I thought this through, and I do think the Jets need to lock Leonard Williams up long term, and I hope it's not. If he wants Aaron Donald money, I'd hesitate to do that. If he wants Fletcher Cox money, I'm not sure I'd do that. I think he's playing on the fifth-year option next year for around $14 million. So I guess somewhere in that neighborhood's probably where I don't love paying him that amount of money, but I also feel like the Jets just are not in a position where they can let young premium talent get away. So if it's in the neighborhood of what he's making on the fifth-year option, I'd think about it. And I've changed my mind on this, there's just no young talent on this team. So how do you trade away a young building block like Leonard Williams, even if you have to overpay him a little bit? And I do think he's probably going to be overpaid on this fifth-year option, but I think you have to try and make something happen. And you're hoping he improves. You're hoping, you know, that maybe the new system unleashes him a little bit. Maybe having more talent on that defensive line next to him, especially off the edge, maybe that'll help him produce a little bit more. You know, it's become kind of a running gag within this fan base. Leonard Williams is hidden production because they talked about it. And people laugh at it. Look, there are areas where a player helps a team that are not obvious, that are more subtle, that don't show up on the stat sheet. But we also need more real production, more tangible production from Leonard Williams. So I think you have to hope you get it from him. I just don't see how you trade him away. I don't see how you trade a 24-year-old who's already been to the Pro Bowl. I don't see how you trade that guy away when you're as talent deficient as the Jets are right now. So I think, yes, I would look to extend him. And so as we're not talking Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox money, if we're talking more along the lines of what he's making on this fifth year out, I'd like to get it a little lower than the $14 million, but he's a guy I'd probably stretch to keep just because, again, the Jets are not in a position where they can afford to let 24-year-old Pro Bowlers get away from this team. Anyway, thanks for all your questions today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes. Have a great Thursday. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'll have a guest who will talk a little bit about Greg Williams, and then we'll do some championship Sunday picks.